I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
In this episode, we're covering off two movies, as we do most of the time. Fight or Flight from 2025 and Bullet Train from 2023.
Yeah. This is interesting, because on the surface, these are very much the same movie, but they're actually presented quite differently. Because I feel like Fight or Flight is what people expected Bullet Train to be. I think it's just kind of a fun, silly action movie.
Yeah.
Whereas Bullet Train, even though obviously it is a fun, silly action movie, it's really kind of presented in the style of a murder mystery without there really being an actual murder mystery in it. It's, you know, you get introduced to all these ensemble characters one at a time and get to see bits of their backstory, and then how, and then you're trying to figure out what's gonna happen and how they're all gonna interact and things like that, which I wasn't quite expecting from it. I think
massive spoilers for both these movies, which I actually highly recommend watching. Bullet Train has sort of come and gone without me seeing it when it was released a couple of years back, and it just looked like a, you know, silly over-the-top action movie,
mm-hmm.
With huge stars in it, and it felt like it kind of missed the mark. And Fight or Flight, I'm going to say something controversial, I enjoyed more.
Oh, really?
And is an over-the-top, silly action comedy movie with all sorts of, like, silly things that happen.
Yeah.
Both these movies are very sub-reality. They're not, like, grounded. They're not John Wick. They're not gritty. They're not, like...
No, yeah.
These are over-the-top, silly, I think, honestly, the cinematography in Fight or Flight could have been a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I think I've been spoiled by that when we were talking about an Upgrade. Because the cinematography in Upgrade is unbelievably amazing, and I feel that they should have taken a little bit, like, there's a scene where they have a fight in a bathroom, and Josh Hartnett's character, which I cannot remember the name of, I don't remember the name of any characters, and I will probably
continue. I remember the names of all the characters in Bullet Train, but I think it's because they're being introduced all the time.
Yeah.
Lucas Reyes is Josh Hartnett's character.
So Josh's character, they have this fight, and he puts his hand on a toilet, and there's a scene where the guy, like, stomps his hand on top of the toilet, and I felt like the cinematography, because, like, would have been better, because it's, like, sort of focusing on his face, would have been better if it followed the foot.
Yeah.
And there are just little bits like that, but there are, like, other sequences in it where there's a lot of, like, using everyday objects to, like, murder people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the cinematography for that went really well, because there's a lot of, like, you know, you line a ring binder up against someone's neck, and then the camera follows the fist as it strikes the ring binder and snaps some dude's neck.
Yeah.
And that was really well done. I just feel like there were certain parts of it where it was, like, very much pick and choose.
It's definitely fun, the concept of, like, these people, because obviously in both movies there's, like, people who are, like, professional hitmen, essentially,
they're in an enclosed space, there's a bunch of hitmen, they're all trying to kill, like, one person, and it just becomes this deranged, like, over the top murdered thing throughout the entire
and in Fight or Flight I enjoyed seeing how the various hitmen snuck their weapons onto a plane.
Yeah.
Like, the guy who has it in... Was it in an oboe? has a sword inside his oboe. But then also the fact that Josh Hartnett's character, Lucas, and a group of people that he teams up with essentially are down in the cargo hold being like, okay, open up the bags, let's see what we can turn into weapons from like ordinary people's luggage. So they're using, like, climbing gear and stuff to be like, all right, this will work. And I found that very fun. Mm. The idea of, like, okay, we're on a plane, people aren't allowed to bring, you know, weapons, except that, you know, there's a sky marshal that they get a gun off.
Two Sky Marshals.
But for the most part, they're like, okay, what can we turn into a weapon from what's allowed on a plane?
It's actually quite shockingly similar how both the characters are very similar.
Mm.
They're like...
Ex-Secret Service... With special skills who are trying to be more chill essentially and are kind of pacifists to some extent, but both end up killing people everywhere they go even though they don't want to.
Yeah, Josh Hutner's character is a alcoholic who's living in Thailand or somewhere in Southeast Asia, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
And he gets like reactivated by his previous handler.
Yeah, they're in Bangkok.
On the other side, you get Brad Pitt, who's basically covering for another guy who's doing a snatch-and-grab job of a briefcase on a train, and that's the only information he's been given.
Yeah.
And it is such a fun... It's very funny because, like, that whole fish-out-of-water scenario of just, like, someone who's just stuck in a situation beyond their control.
Yeah.
But all these people are murderers.
Yeah.
They're all professional murderers for livings, and they all come off as, like, very much fish out of water, because they're just, like, so surprised that everybody else is a murderer.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's such a fun... My favorite entire scene out of Fight or Flight was a guy that kept getting randomly shoved into the overhead compartment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's just, like, you know, the bunch of, like, nameless hitmen all fighting each other in the aisles of a plane... And, like, one of the guys is so small that he just, like, a huge dude just picks him up and shoves him into the overhead compartment. And then someone uses the fact that there's a guy in an overhead compartment in, like, a fight beat.
Mm.
And then, like, at the end of it, where it's also, like, all the murderers except, like, the two main characters, like, they let him out again and he just jumps back down ready to fight. And it's such a silly sequence. There's a lot of... strange drug use in both these movies as well. There is a character called... What is the character called in Bullet Train? The lady who deals exclusively with, like, Venom. Viper or something?
No, she's not the Viper. I have taken down all her names, but she's only in it towards the end.
Yeah.
The Hornet.
And she's played by the same lady who plays Domino in
Deadpool.
Yeah. There's a lot of Deadpool 2 crossover in this movie.
Yeah, the director, David Leitch, also directed Deadpool 2.
Yeah. And then at the same time in Bloody Fight or Flight, there's a sequence where... The person they're all after, the ghost, who's this, like, grade-A, like, world-class, world-ending hacker,
mm-hmm.
who's basically doing it, like, Heart of Gold, like, very rogue-esque character, is, like, doing bad things for good.
Yeah.
She's been given, because she's been shot, and that was, like, the whole, like, how they found her and blah, blah, blah. They don't know who it was in the beginning. Has been given all this medicine... And there's that sequence where he's, like, injured, so he does, like, painkillers, thinking they're regular painkillers, but in reality they're not painkillers. They were, like, some sort of venom.
Toad venom.
And then he's just, like, super high through an entire fight sequence, and it's just so funny because, like, from his point of view, it's all, like, rainbows and shining lights, but from, like, reality point of view, there's just, like, blood splatter and insanity happening.
Yeah.
It's very Meet the Pyro from the TF2 thing.
I don't know what that means, but okay. Some people listening will. The other kind of main similarity between these, I think, is also that in both cases, our main character, Secret Service guy, is in contact with a female handler by phone. In Bullet Train, he's mostly kind of talking to her the whole time, and then his phone gets destroyed, so he has to, like, take someone else's phone and call her, and then just keeps the conversation going.
Yeah.
Whereas in Fight or Flight, obviously he's not on the phone to her the whole time, but he's texting her from the plane.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that, and this one's definitely a spoiler, the reason that all of the people have ended up and in Bullet Train it's these specific people.
Yeah.
Whereas in Fight or Flight it's just anyone that they could get. have ended up on this motor transport together is it was all orchestrated by someone else who's not on it.
Yeah.
So in Fight or Flight, that is a corrupt CIA agent, I believe.
Well, I think they were ex-agency, like, working for some weird, like, mobile company or something. Okay.
But he was going rogue, essentially, anyway, for his own gain. And then in Bullet Train, it's the White Death, who is, I guess, kind of the equivalent of the ghost in Bullet Train, as in that's the person that everyone's there to, like, it's the connecting force between everyone who's there. That's what they're there about. Not all of them are there to kill him.
Yeah.
Several of them are there to try and kill him. But the ones who aren't are still there to do something in connection with him.
All the characters are very linked together, and I find it very fun.
Yeah.
In Bullet Train, because, like, they're all, like, Brad Pitt just keeps killing people and being like, do I know this? Why is this person trying to kill me? They look really familiar, and it's just like, oh, that was from that job. It's like, oh, but I didn't kill those people. Like,
yeah.
I was just there. Just
happened to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very fun movies. I mentioned how good the cinematography was in Fight or Flight. I feel it was equally, like, there was a high production value, obviously, because it was a massive movie, Bullet Train.
Bullet Train, yeah. Bullet Train, you can tell there's a much higher production value. Now, we haven't been able to find out the budget of Fight or Flight.
Yeah, because it's a...
But it's definitely a low budget.
Yeah, because it was made by Sky.
Right.
And
the only, like, big actor... Well, I was going to say the only big actor is Josh Hartnett, but he's not, because the lady who plays Bo-Katan is in it, and I've forgotten her real person name. Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah. But even saying that, like, they're not...
Yeah, they're not...
They're not, like, blockbuster. Like, they're not going to be, like, in an Avatar.
No, I mean, because, you know, conversely, you've got Brad Pitt, Joey King, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Brian Tyree Henry...
Michael Shannon,
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
Logan Lerman plays the son. He doesn't even look like himself, and he literally, like, does nothing in the movie.
Is dead.
You've got cameos from Masioka and Karen Fukuhara, which I thought were very fun.
Yeah.
Especially since I was like, there's no way they're gonna put Karen Fukuhara in here and not have her do some martial arts, and then she doesn't do anything. She is absolutely a red herring. Obviously, you've got Channing Tatum in a cameo where he thinks that everyone wants to do some weird anonymous sex stuff with him.
It's so on brand for his, like, him being like, because, like, that was a whole pitch of This Is the End, which now kind of can't really enjoy that movie because of one of the characters being a piece of shit.
Yeah.
One of the actors. But yeah, just making it this, like, the back and forth between that, because I've seen it in interviews of, like, them sitting around and, you know, doing a little powwow of, like, how they're going to make this movie, and then, like, you know, these writing these scenes, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to give some, you know, Danny McBride turns up and he's got, like, a sex slave, and then they were, like, texted him at Channing Tatum at, like, 4 a.m. in the morning, and apparently he was plastered and was just like, fuck yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, apparently the cameo in Bullet Train was just written as, like, insert cameo here, we'll find someone to play this role, and Channing Tatum was like, me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ryan Reynolds also cameos, another big name. So in comparison, the amount of budget that must have just gone on hiring big name actors for Bullet Train is crazy.
Because it was the same in was it the other guy? Who was the one, the weird one with where he's in, like, a video game with Ryan?
Oh, Free Guy.
Free Guy, yeah. And it's the same with him pulling out the Captain America shield and see Chris Evans watching it being like, what the shit? And the whole sequence of Vanisher.
There's a Channing Tatum cameo in that as well, right? Yeah. It's massive. It's a huge movie. And it was, like, a blockbuster movie. Flight or Flight kind of comes across as a ripoff.
Yeah.
Because it came out 2 years later and is a very similar concept. But a much, much lower budget.
So. I thoroughly enjoyed it as a stupid popcorn, whatever, like, very enjoyable. All the scenes are enjoyable, the little, like, quips between people. Bullet Train is well more rounded. It is well written.
Well, I liked Bullet Train better.
Yeah.
But that's because you're big into schlocky action.
Yeah, I love schlocky action. And I
really like character-driven pieces. And I was like, oh, we should have seen Bullet Train in cinema. This is actually, like, the ideal mix of things we both like.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me, it felt like it could have been a Knives Out movie.
Yeah, it does feel that way, right? And it
reminded me a bit of, like, See How They Run. The Sam Rockwell murder mystery. It very much felt more like it was borrowing tropes from that kind of genre than from regular action. Whereas Fight or Flight was very much like, this is an action comedy.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
But I really liked the mystery elements of Bullet Train. Because that's the kind of shit that I enjoy.
I think the character development in, like, obviously you get, like, massive exposition dumps from all the characters in Fight or Flight, you know, like, you know, I was a slave and this, and I'm using my powers to take down the bad guys and all this, and I built this, like, supercomputer, which is currently, you know, spoilers for the end of the movie, flying the plane, and we're not actually going to end up in the place we've
seen. I thought that was predictable.
Yeah.
Like, the second the pilots were like, oh.
Yeah, they were like,
the comms are down, but the autopilot says we're still on track. And they're like, but what about the weather? You're not what I predicted. It was like, oh, that's fine. And yeah, I was like, oh, they're 100%
not
going on a different course and she's controlling it.
Yeah. There was very moments of, like, with the two pilots was very funny because you have the scene where they're discussing the fact they're going to be the next Sully.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Mormons murder them?
Yeah.
Out of fucking nowhere? It is such a bizarre sequence of events. It's
the two Mormons trying to hide from all the...
Yeah, it's like, please don't open the door except for anybody but me. And then they'd open the door and Mormons run in. And then one of the pilots pulls a flare gun and he shoots the flare gun and the flare bounces around the cockpit and then strikes him in the eye and kills him. And, like, it's just such a random sequence because, like, then they rush out and be like, someone killed the pilot.
Someone killed the pilot.
It's like, so random. Okay, all
right. Bullet Train, nothing is random.
Yeah. Bullet Train is, like, everything beat by beat is really well done. The relationship between Tangerine and Lemon is fantastic.
Mm.
The lead up between the father, who Joey King's, like, that whole lead up with Joey King, the revenge plot, the, like, Yakuza thing, it's so fun, and it is a really well-written movie. Like, I would thoroughly watch Bullet Train again 6 to 12 to 18 months later. Like, just to, like, be like, what do we want to watch? Oh, you know, let's just watch it.
Put on Bullet Train.
Bullet Train again. Yeah.
And I think it would be really fun. I mean, and that's the kind of rewatchability of mystery stuff, is to go back and be like, how much of this was hinted at from the beginning? Because I like that kind of shit.
Yeah.
The
Hornet thing, you were like, that's weird. You sort of had it more early on.
Yeah, there's a moment, so the spoiler, the Hornet,
the big
assassin, for most of the time has been in this mascot suit on the train.
Yeah.
But there is, like, a moment relatively early on where Brad Pitt bumps into the mascot and then drops the briefcase that he's been trying to steal. And then the mascot picks it up and he tries to pull it off the mascot and the mascot tries to pull it back. And I was like, why does the mascot want the briefcase? Like, that's connected. And then it's not brought up again for ages. And then when it was, like, going to reveal the story of the Hornet, I was like, oh, she's in the mascot costume.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
The,
Because there's no other reason for the mascot to suddenly be like, I'm going to hold on to this briefcase.
Aaron Taylor-Joy.
Johnson,
sorry. I always get that.
Anya Taylor-Joy. Yeah,
yeah. I think is a very talented actor.
Yeah.
And I feel like he plays this role really well. Like, everything about him and, like, Lemon and Tangerine's relationship is absolutely fantastic. The dialogue between each other, you know, all I really, really thoroughly enjoyed that. And I just feel like he keeps, whoever his agent is, needs to pull their head out of their ass because he just keeps getting really bad roles.
Is his agent his groomer wife?
Might be. Let's.
You know about his groomer wife, right?
No. You want to talk about it? Or like, Google this.
He's like the same age as his stepdaughters.
That's weird.
His wife, I think she's an agent, met him when he was like 14 or something. And then was like very close friends with him. And then they started officially dating, I think, when he was 17. And then got married when he was like 18 or 19.
She is 58 years old.
Yeah, I could have the ages slightly off in that, but certainly I think all of that happened in his teenage years. Really a big example of a man being groomed, which you don't get examples of very much, but it's, I feel very uncomfortable about it, because it's not great. Oh no, okay, apparently he was 18 when they met.
Oh, yes.
Which isn't actually as bad. But still, he was 18 and she was 41, and then they started dating very shortly after that and were engaged a year later.
Yeah.
Weird. And then got married when he was 21.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
And he's stepfather to her two daughters from her previous marriage, who I think are around the same age. And then they have two of their own children, one of which was born when he was 19, I think, or maybe 20. So I don't like it. I think it's pretty horrible, to be honest. I think there's no reason for a 41-year-old to decide to marry an 18-year-old.
Yeah, his career isn't great. Looking at it, like, he was Kick-Ass, he was in Kick-Ass 2, he was in Captain America and Winter Soldier, he was in Godzilla, which I feel was weirdly written and was written backwards, but that's a whole conversation for another day. Obviously, he's, you know, Quicksilver in Avengers, so, you know, he was in Age of Ultron. Tenet. Good movie, really good movie. I'll need to rewatch that at some point. He's in The Fall Guy, which was also a very enjoyable movie.
Mm-hmm.
But like Kraven the Hunter, which like...
Well, he got cast as Kraven based on his performance in Bullet Train.
Yeah. It's very interesting how toxic that sort of thing has been, because I believe, you know, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not keeping up to date. I could research it without quoting it, but I'm not going to, because where's the controversy in that? I believe those Spider-Man spin-offs were originally cast and, like, touted as they were part of the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Even though they were Sony and not Marvel.
Yeah.
Because, except for Spider-Man...
But he's already in the MCU, because he plays Quicksilver in the MCU. Yeah.
So it's very confusing that he would then play a character from another Marvel thing.
Yeah, you say that Chris Evans was the Human Torch and then he became Captain America.
And Robert Downey Jr. was
Iron Man. For a very long time. And now he's Doctor Doom. Yeah. It's not a first by any manner of means. Yeah, I don't know. I just find... Because he was a child actor.
Yeah.
He's in, like... We've done another film with him, The Illusionist. He played a young Edward Norton, I believe. In The Illusionist. So to be a child actor and then to meet this 40-something-year-old woman when you're a teenager and then marry her while you're still a teenager. It's just... I don't know. I get it that people say child actors grow up quicker than other people, but, like, could he not, you know, have had relationships with people his own age? I just find it really suspicious of any adult human being, anyone over the age of, like, 23 who decides to date a teenager.
Mm.
is. And even, like, 20 to 23 is, like, you, like, if, but I get it if it's, like, a 2 or 3 year gap, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And this goes both ways as well, like, what Leo is up to is...
Yeah, absolutely. Completely toxic. But people talk about it more when it's a man dating a younger woman, I feel like. Yeah. Especially, you know, like, that's what you hear a lot about grooming, but, like, women can groom, and to have someone who you worked with as a, like, as a filmmaker, like, I think, because I thought she was an agent, but she's a director, so she directed him in a movie when he was a teenager. So they worked together where she was a director and he was an actor, a child actor, in a movie. And then she started dating him when the movie came out and then was engaged to him a year later and then gave birth to a child that was fathered by a teenager while she was in her 40s. There's just something... like, no normal adult wants to date a teenager. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's something wrong. I don't know how to describe it, but there's no, like, if you are a regular adult, you're not looking at a teenager and going, I want to have a relationship with them.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, even if you think they're mature for their age or whatever, that's still, like, practically a child.
Yeah.
And there's no way you're in the same point in your life. There's no way you're at the same level of maturity. There's no, like, I don't know. It's just weird. It's just weird. And I know people are talking about Millie Bobby Brown and Jake Bon Jovi at the moment.
Yeah.
Being... you know, and they're 21 and adopting a child, but, like, you know, they have the money to raise a child, and they have their own homes, and they've been together since they were teenagers, and they've gotten married, and they're, you know, and they're at the same stage in their lives.
Yeah.
And those are decisions they're making. And I understand, you know, that someone who's 18, 19, 20 is an adult, but they're still, like... there's such a world of difference between anything in the life of an 18-year-old, no matter how mature they are, no matter what's going on in their life, and a 41-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, you're almost 40. Could you imagine deciding to just date an 18-year-old?
No.
Isn't that just weird?
Yeah.
It's just fucking weird.
It is.
And there's no normal or healthy reason to do that.
Yeah, it's does call into question, like, I wouldn't say, not automatically jumping to mental health, but, like, you, when it comes, Madonna is the example I'm going to use.
Right. Oh, yeah, because she also has done this, right?
She has gone really off the rails because, like, she does not look physically well.
Mm-hmm.
She looks cartoonish, and it's very predatory, and it works for both genders and like, all sexuality types. Like, it's a very predatory thing to do. If you're a predominant male actor, director, like, you know, someone in production, you know, this is this whole... you know, what came out of Me Too of, like, the example of, like, oh, well, you know, this person did this and then pushed their stardom. And it's like, yeah, but, like, that's not what people are willing to trade, like, be on merit alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you do definitely find, you know, the jokes that are thrown at Leo. But, like, something is wrong with a lot of celebrities because they've given it all, because they are basically human sacrifices to us. You know, that whole era where no one could literally leave Britney alone to the point where it became a meme.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all of her actions had to be reported on. You know, none of these people, when they're famous for these reasons, can ever... You're grimacing. Why are you grimacing?
I'm just looking up this lady, and the first movie she directed was the movie where she met Aaron Taylor-Johnson, and then announced their engagement at the premiere of the movie. And then the second movie she directed was 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay.
And any expert on BDSM will tell you a terrible example of BDSM.
Also, it's a movie about a weird power dynamic between people in a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
Where it's a woman in a sexual relationship with her boss who has a lot of power over her.
Yeah.
Directed by a lady who was the boss of a child that she's now engaged to, or at this stage married to and has two kids with. Who she the with massive power dynamic there. Anyway.
Yeah. Talking of bullet trains, I think we've derailed.
Can I just say, I just hope Aaron Taylor Johnson is okay.
I hope he's happy.
Yeah, but I hope he's okay. He's about my age, so at this stage he's, you know, they've been married for a long time and he's in his mid-30s.
Yep.
But I don't know. I think that would mess you up. Being in a relationship.
A child star and being in the limelight for majority of your life might, like, I feel like Macaulay Culkin has got his shit together in the last couple of years, but for a long time he clearly wasn't.
Yeah.
And there are probably so many other actors that aren't as famous that were abused by their parents, had their all their money. Like, there's probably, it probably just happens, you know, like, quite regularly, but because the people aren't super famous and because they don't sell magazines or get clicks on videos, you probably don't see it. And it's very interesting that we very heavily focus on Hollywood, but there are other areas of movie production around the world. Like, the huge pushback at, like, The Hobbit here in New Zealand around the lack of pay for people, and, you know, you'd turn up and you'd stand there in full bloody plate armor for 8 hours for you to be on screen for 2 minutes, and they're only going to pay you for the 2 minutes, even though you've been there for, like, 12 hours, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a huge pushback by that, and, you know, there was a lot of, like, naysayers of, like, well, if we pay you fairly, we'll destroy our market because it won't be cheap to make movies here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Georgia, the state, has done really well because, like, there are so many things that are made in Georgia because they're literally like, well, we'll give you massive tax rebates, like, please film here, please employ people that live here, like, and I feel like New Zealand's sort of done that, but we're very much like, we don't mass produce anything in New Zealand, we are very much, we make the best of stuff, and I'm not like, you know, but, you know, it's very obvious with the All Blacks coming from one of the best rugby teams in the world consistently for, like, decades.
Yeah.
From a country that's population is smaller than an entire Australian state.
Yeah.
And you have the same thing when it comes to Weta Workshop and all their stuff they're doing. The fact that, like, Weta are the ones making Avatar, and it's like, out of all the other production companies in the rest of the world, and you come to New Zealand to get the best of the best.
Yep.
And 90% of what we've done over the years have been number 8 wire. And for those who don't know that Kiwiism, it is literally fixing stuff with, like, whatever you've got.
Yeah.
There's a number 8 wire is literally, you know, a gauge of wire that you'd have in your toolbox that you can wrap around things to keep other things steady, or, you know, attach two things together. And it's very much that mindset of New Zealanders of, like, you make it work, because majority of New Zealanders grew up poor.
Mm-hmm.
In New Zealand, we grew up poor. And it's very much like, you know, you can argue about late stage capitalism, but we are, like, the younger child, the younger cousin of the rest of the West. And, you know, the joke that I always made is, like, until the internet, New Zealand was a decade behind everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 80s really went into the 90s, especially when it came to clothing and stuff, and it wasn't until, like, MTV and brands coming to New Zealand, like, that we were very much in the past. And I feel like that's just sort of the whole thing. You're just nodding
mm-hmm.
with agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't grow up here.
Yeah, yeah. But Ireland is very similar. Shocking export of Ireland that most people don't know is the massive pharmaceutical industry, which is a very worry with the trade tariffs that were going on. It's like, well, hang on a second, but we supply a lot of pharmaceuticals in the United States. Like, what does that mean for one of our largest industries? Australia's done really well because they've been able to export.
Ireland's also huge for localization.
Yeah.
For, like, video games, animation, et cetera, et cetera. They all have, like, studios in Ireland,
yeah.
you know, to work on European localization stuff. Blizzard is a big employer in Ireland. I don't know if it is anymore because I obviously am not there looking at jobs these days. But it certainly was a big employer in Ireland.
You're in New Zealand looking for jobs.
Yeah, a lot of big international animation studios have outsourced to smaller studios in Ireland.
Yeah.
So a lot of people that we know in the animation industry over there are always working on pretty big name projects that their studio doesn't get a lot of credit for because the studio, the credit goes to, you know, Cartoon Network or Disney or whoever. Mattel, to name a few who outsourced to Ireland.
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea of just how, like, niche you can get and how similar, like, those kind of industries are for New Zealand and Ireland, how linked they are. You know, you wouldn't be here for Rum without Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were like, watched Lord of the Rings, and you're like, I want to see that in person.
I'm like, what's this place? Yeah. New Zealand, never heard of it.
And then you're like, I'm back from my travel. I have to get this job to look me over. Oh, great, I've got experience in that industry when I end up here. Mm-hmm. If you hadn't have gotten that part-time job, you wouldn't have ended up meeting each other. How weird is that?
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Did one fixed-term job when I had a few months between visas, and without that, we wouldn't be sitting here today.
Yeah.
Isn't that nuts?
Yep.
Strange how things happen. Anyway. Bullet Train.
And Fight or Flight.
And Fight or Flight. Yeah, these are movies. I enjoyed both these films. I will say, like I said, I did enjoy Bullet Train more. I did clearly have much higher production value, but also just I loved the way the story all went together.
I think
it's very comedic, the kind of reveal at the end, spoiler, that, like, because the big reveal is that, you know, every single person, all of the people that we know about on this train were all put there specifically because they all played a part in the death of the White Death's wife.
Yeah.
To the point that he even had his own son assassinated as part of it, intentionally, even though the guys who were escorting his son thought that they had fucked up.
Yeah.
It was actually part of the plan. But the comedic turn of it is that, like, the reason Brad Pitt is there is because he is filling in for another guy who called in sick.
Yeah.
And it's that guy, played by Ryan Reynolds, who played a part, who literally killed the wife.
Yeah.
And should have been on the train. And things only kind of turned out how they did because it was the wrong guy on the train. Yeah. Which is funny.
Yeah, there are some fantastic writing in that movie. But there is no close combat fight with a chainsaw
in a true plane. On a plane.
Yeah.
Chainsaw on a plane is a interesting choice.
Yeah, I just loved all those fight sequences. They were fantastic.
I do kind of wish that the ghost had done more fighting.
Yeah, it's almost off screen as well in some of the fight sequences.
Because the whole point is that he's, like, trying to find this person who's the ghost, and everyone else on the plane is also trying to find this person who's the ghost, who has a $10 million bounty on their head. And he finds it. He figures out, because he's actually using deduction and has really good instincts, he figures out who it is very quickly. But then most of the time she just gets left cowering and letting him do all the fighting.
Yeah.
And it's like, she should have, like, as soon as she reveals who she is, because I get it to a point where he's saying, no one else knows it's you, I need you alive, they all want you dead, so let's, you act normal for now. But then as soon as her identity is revealed to everyone, she should absolutely have flicked a switch and become, like, a badass.
She
didn't, and that upset me, because I was waiting for her to be like, okay, well, secret's out, let's fuck these people up, you know? And instead, she, like, when she gets the chainsaw, I was like, oh, she's going to do some shit with this chainsaw, but she just gives it to him.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, lame.
But she does kill, like, other assassins. It's just, like, not on the main screen, because it's just, like, him watching it happen while he's fighting somebody else.
Yeah, and also it kind of seems like it's almost accidental. Like, she's on a one-on-one fight with this guy and almost loses.
Yeah.
Whereas he's, like, battling off a bunch of different dudes at once. And then she has, like, these backup martial artists who are protecting her, who are all women, and then, I mean, they're kind of, they're okay, but then they're not, like, fantastic.
Yeah.
I just think she should have been more badass. Like, I would have liked to see that. But other than that, I think it's a fun movie.
Yeah, it was definitely enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like, none of it was bad. Just could have been better. But, you know, that's, what do you get for a low-budget Sky production? Which is bananas to me. Because I thought Sky was dead, finally. My issue with Sky has been long and jaded for many and many a year.
Fair enough.
Because they had a very parasitic relationship with their consumers and basically only survived because of elderly people. Because what you would get, like, from like when Netflix first came to New Zealand, it was, like, super cheap, had everything you wanted, and was internet-based. Versus Sky, which has existed in New Zealand since, you know, the battle between them and Saturn, which was a satellite-based system.
Oh, it looks like Sky just was a distributor rather than producing the film.
Oh, okay.
So it was produced by a whole load of companies, none of which I'm familiar with. Ashbury Park Productions, the Royal Budapest Film Co., F4F Films, Liam J Films, MEP Capital, and Thunder Road Pictures. So that sounds like most of the... Oh, Thunder Road Pictures are the people who did the John Wick movies.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But most of the rest of the money for it seems like it would have come from Hungary.
Weird.
And it is primarily shot in Hungary, it looks like, so...
Still don't like Sky.
Yeah, that's fair. all of the plane fight sequences are filmed in Hungary. So I guess the soundstage or whatever they use for the plane.
Yeah.
Was there interesting.
You know what else is interesting? If you go to our website at takes2.co.nz, you can find links to everything, social media, that sort of stuff. You can even join our Discord. I mention it every single episode. If you really want to help us out, if you've enjoyed this episode, if you enjoyed one of these movies, you didn't like them, if you don't enjoy something, grooming, there we go.
Oh, God.
If you don't enjoy grooming, share this episode with somebody. Because
if you are concerned for Aaron Taylor Johnson...
And Millie Bobby Brown.
No, Millie Bobby Brown is fine. I mean, she's... Millie Bobby Brown, I was concerned about when Drake was hanging out with her when she was, like, 12.
Yeah,
that was a concern. A
piece of shit.
But I have no concerns with Millie Bobby Brown and Jake Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Like, his family seems really nice. His parents were high school sweethearts who've been married for decades. And they are very wholesome and they run a soup kitchen. So, like, he's been brought up wealthy, but he's been brought up in a pretty, as wealthy families go, a pretty grounded one.
Yeah.
So I think they're probably okay. And I don't think there's a concern there just because they adopted a baby in their 20s. That's actually fine.
As we've discussed on a previous episode, Madonna is in fact a predator. From that episode where she just wanted to have sex with Willem Dafoe.
That's true. We did talk about that.
So if you don't like predatory nature, please share this episode with somebody. It does a lot for us because advertising is horribly expensive and it doesn't always work. So sharing on your social media or, you know, just DMing someone directly, you know, even against their will, you know, would be
fantastic. Be like, hey, you're always complaining about
predators
in Hollywood. Listen to this movie, listen to this podcast about two dumb action movies. Cool. I'll do some trivia, I guess.
That is your, as a trivia queen.
I don't have a lot for Fight or Flight. The number one thing was that Josh Harnett performed 100% of his own stunts. Good on him.
Yeah.
He's quite good in it. Yeah. I do enjoy him in it.
And it's weird because, like, his career is not great either.
And the other thing was that the fight choreographer, Brahim Chab, and the stunt coordinator, Alain Moussi, have both been stunt doubles for Jean-Claude Van Damme, which I thought was very funny. Because, like, that's very funny. And on the same note as that, for Bullet Train, David Leitch, who directed it, and also directed it, as we mentioned, Deadpool 2, has been Brad Pitt's stunt double for many films, including Fight Club, Ocean's 11, Troy, and Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Wow.
So I like that Brad Pitt stunt double then cast Brad Pitt in a movie where Brad Pitt did 95% of his own stunts.
Yeah, yeah.
The main exceptions being hard falls and the running scenes. He wanted the character to just have like an increasing number of bruises, cuts, and lumps on himself as he went through the movie, and they talked him out of it. Aaron Taylor-Johnson also did a bunch of his own stunts and managed to lose a chunk of his hand and pass out after doing one of his stunts. I'm not sure exactly which one, but that's impressive but not safe. And Brad Pitt, the sequence where Brad Pitt gets bitten by the snake, that was his own pet snake that he brought to the production. Brad Pitt was like, oh, don't worry about CGI, I've got a snake that can bite me. So that's just Brad Pitt playing with his own pet snake on set. This is the first film that was fully filmed after the start of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Wow.
So the first film to have COVID precautions in place from the very beginning. And they managed to avoid having any COVID-related delays throughout the filming. And it also meant, though, that they were supposed to shoot the film in lots of different locations, and instead it's all shot on just two sound stages on the Sony lot in LA.
Wow.
Because obviously travel was not a big thing at that point. And then the other thing which I took down because it would parallel Fight or Flight is that originally the script for Bullet Train called for the movie to open after the train crashes at the end of the movie.
Right.
With Ladybug surveying the scene and the chaos and then jumping back to the start.
Yeah.
Which is basically what happens in Fight or Flight, that it starts off in the middle of the biggest fight sequence on the plane and then, like, rewinds to, like, here's how we got here. So I thought that was interesting. And they opted to instead go with the opening where they have Kimura and the Elder at the kid's hospital bed. Because they thought that it made the stakes much stronger.
Mm.
The budget for Bullet Train was $85.9 million, $20 million of which was Brad Pitt's salary.
Of course.
and at box office, it made $239 million, so a bit of a profit.
Yeah.
Fight or Flight, like we mentioned, we can't find the budget info anywhere, but at box office, it only made $4.2 million, which is not a lot, and I hope it was really low budget. Otherwise, they made a significant loss on that.
It also could be the fact that, like, maybe it was exclusive to Sky.
I mean, definitely not exclusive to Sky, because it did have cinema releases. But, yeah, there probably is a lot of streaming of it, which would account for some of it. And I don't think it would have got as long of a cinema release as Bullet Train. I feel like Bullet Train was in cinemas for a while, because it is a big, big blockbuster-type film. I'm glad we watched it.
Yeah.
I think both were very enjoyable films.
Definitely.
But I do, yeah, I would like, whenever we watch it again, I would like to be watching from the beginning to see if I can...
Pick a little bit.
Yeah, see where all the little clues are. Because there has to be some. Yeah. Because it's very much laid out like a murder mystery. And we haven't really even talked about all the characters because it's such an ensemble cast. I definitely had a favorite character, and you know who it is because I kept like cheering for them. Did you have a favorite character in our ensemble cast of Bullet Train?
Not really. I just really liked Lemon and Tangerine. I think that whole their sequences were quite enjoyable because of the relationship, because of all the craziness, you know, because they were basically playing Weekend at Bernie's, a lot of it. Making up shit on the fly, that sort of sibling relationship with each other was really enjoyable.
I will say, because they're referred to consistently as the twins.
Yeah.
And one is played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, the other is Brian Tyler Henry. Is that his name?
Yeah, I think so.
Both three named people. Those are people who look very different.
Yeah.
And then it's like, is it a joke that they're called the twins? But then there is a flashback of them as kids together. Yeah. And it's also kind of hinted at with their names, because Lemon and Tangerine come from the same family of fruit.
Yeah.
So it's implied that they are actually biologically twin brothers.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I mean, because that can happen with, you know, fraternal twins and mixed race parents.
Mm.
That you end up with, you know, siblings who look like they're from entirely different families. It's implied, but like also in the movie, every time someone calls them the twins, everyone is like, really?
Okay.
And I think that's funny. But yeah, Lemon was my favorite. He just seemed like a nice guy. Mm. He just wanted to like assign Thomas the Tank Engine characters to everyone. And I did really like their relationship, because I like that they're kind of, you know, have that real sibling, you know, nagging at each other, but then the second there's any real stakes, they have each other's back instantly. And there's the moment where, at this point, we believe Lemon is dead, and Tangerine doesn't know where Lemon is.
Yeah.
And then he sees that he's stuck the train sticker on the girl's back. And he's like, this is the... I can't even remember the name of the train, because I don't know enough.
Diesel.
Diesel, yeah. Diesel is the ultimate villain. And then he's like, he's just going to kill this girl on the basis that she has a diesel sticker on her back. Because he's like, well, this means that he knew that she was the ultimate evil on the train. And it's like, okay. And it was accurate. But then I was happy every time Lemon survived. Because he has two times where you think that he's died and he's still around. And the funny thing about that is that apparently he was supposed to die, and then they just were like, oh no, let's just bring him back. He's too likable. Let's just pull him back from that.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us. Like, share, subscribe, comment. You can do comments on Spotify now.
Yeah, your comments on Spotify.
Be like, hey, from somewhere, wherever you're from, wherever you're listening from, just be like, hello from, you know, wherever. Mumbai.
Be fun to see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.